Everyone, the next talk is going to start, so say hello to Carlos.
Well, okay, so we are not that many people. If you want to come forward, it's okay. Maybe we can make it more, I don't know, like more like a whatever. You can ask questions or so you have this opportunity in a small group. So I was going to talk about how we scaled Jenkins as an example of an application running on Mesos, on Apache Mesos. I work for CloudBees, the company behind a lot of the Jenkins development, and I contributed things to the Jenkins Mesos plugin, also to the Java Marathon client. Who is using Mesos?
I know.
Okay. Who's heard about Mesos? Okay, just some people. You haven't heard about Mesos a little? Okay, yes? No? Well. I'm also a long-time contributor to Apache, over 12 years, I think. I'm an Apache member. And so mostly doing Apache Maven back in the day. So it's a lot of build development tooling and things like that. But also contributed to Eclipse Foundation, to Puppet, and now mostly I'm doing Jenkins stuff and all things related to Docker. And so what we did was taking Jenkins and try to scale it up. And so when you scale Jenkins, I mean, who's using Jenkins? Who? Yeah? Okay. Better. So we have when you scale Jenkins, you have two options. You can have more build agents per master, or you can have more masters. When you have more build agents, it's fairly easy to have to add agents. There's a lot of plugins like the AWS plugin and different cloud providers plugins that will start VMs for you, or you have Docker plugins and the Mesos plugin and Kubernetes plugins. That the Kubernetes plugin is one I did that will create containers for build agents for you. So this is all dynamically. Every time you add more jobs, you can set some parameters, but new machines are going to be added to the pool of agents of Jenkins. The problem is the master is still a single point of failure. It's not trivial to have a... I mean, you cannot have Jenkins having multiple instances of Jenkins running as HA setup. And also, if you only have one master, then you can only have one version of each plugin installed. You're going to have conflicting versions, conflicting plugins, nothing like that. And there's a limit. It's pretty high, but there's still a limit on how many build agents you can attach to a master. And the other option, having more masters, what you can do is you have a master per organization or per group of people. I mean, this is great for big corporations or big organizations where you have different teams, and you basically give a master to each team, and they can do whatever they want, install the plugins they want without affecting other teams. The problem is you are missing something like single sign-on. I mean, you don't want to go and log into each individual master, Jenkins, master, server, and you don't want to, I mean, you need some way to centralize this configuration and operation. One thing that the advantage we started with is at CloudBees, we are building what is called the Jenkins Operation Center that basically allows you to aggregate all these masters and have a centralized single sign-on, and you can also install plugins in multiple masters at once. It's some sort of aggregator of multiple masters, so that helped us. And what we build is called now the CloudBees platform, Jenkins platform, private SaaS edition. Basically, we are using the best of both approaches. So we have a Jenkins operation center, which is this aggregator with multiple masters that are created dynamically on demand. So you go to the operation center, say I want a new Jenkins master, and it will create it for you. And also, all these masters that you create are going to have dynamic build agents. So every time you start a new job, a new build agent is going to be created and assigned to that job. and they get destroyed. So it's all dynamic. And we also have some extra things, like we run Elasticsearch in the cluster for both metrics and log aggregation, Logstash. So this is something we built also on top of Mesos. So doing containers is not trivial. This is the example, a demo we did. So this was running for Jenkins World. We did this demo running 2,000 masters in over 300 virtual machines on Amazon, and running around 7,000, 8,000 build agents concurrently. So this is one dashboard we built. You get each square is a Jenkins master. This is the Mesos task list, the UI. I mean, not much to see there, but basically the other, I mean, this is all HA, fault tolerant, etc. So everything you would expect from a modern application, where if you have masters that don't like respond to the keep alive, they will turn into yellow state. And this means like they're getting restarted or moved from one VM to another for whatever reason. And yeah, so it was three Mesos master and 317 Mesos slaves. So this is all of them. So this is all the VMs we have. And in total, this cluster had like 12 terabytes of RAM and almost like 4,000 CPUs in Amazon. So with Docker, a lot of times it's like this, you know, like Docker is like the golden hammer. You have whatever problem you have, Docker fix it. So, and this is a lot of what our like clients and people using Jenkins are asking now. They're like, they just want Docker support, Docker for everything. So one thing we were trying to do with this, with moving into this Docker wall and containers, is having isolated Jenkins masters. So basically, like having one master for each team, isolated build agents and jobs. So each job gets its own, runs its own container, and that container is destroyed at the end. So there's no resource overuse. You just use what you need every time and so. And you also want to have memory and CPU limits, so people in one team are not screwing the cluster resources for other teams. This is a great quote from Kelsey Hightower. Like, how would you design your infrastructure if you could logging like SSH into the machine? So that's one goal to have in mind. And definitely one thing you have to do is embrace failure. Things are gonna fail, and you should have, I mean, your cluster should recover automatically. You don't wanna go manually and try to fix things. So basically what I said, we wanted this to run HA, fault tolerant, public, private, or bare metal, and we started with AWS and OpenStack, and we chose Mesos, which is, for those of you not that familiar with it, it's basically like a cluster scheduler that allows you to run things on top, and things could be Hadoop, Spark, Kafka, Jenkins agents, and any framework. It's called, in Mesos world, it's called frameworks. So you can create your own framework that basically runs in a cluster. The framework is like an app that gets offers from the cluster saying like, well, there are these servers that have this much memory and this much CPU available, and the framework decides what to run on those machines. Alternatives that you can find today are Docker Swarm or Kubernetes. Mesos has been around for a long time. It also allows you to run processes, not just containers or Docker containers. It's been used in Apple for Siri. It's used in Twitter, eBay, PayPal, Microsoft, all these big companies. While Docker Swarm or Kubernetes are a lot newer, like 2 years. Well, Swarm is even newer because they changed their Swarm model just recently. But Kubernetes has been around probably for 2 years, 2-3 years. And one of the things we run on Mesos is Marathon. If you're not familiar with that, this allows you to run tasks that are long running. So Mesos is mostly to run tasks that start and finish. Marathon makes sure that if your task finishes or gets killed for whatever reason, it starts the task again. So this is great for running the Jenkins masters. Well, we run the Mesos, in Mesos directly, we run the Jenkins agents because they start, do something, and finish. For the Jenkins masters, we run them on Marathon because, I mean, you want to keep them running all the time. And it allows you to define what ports to expose and how much, well, memory and CPU that comes from Mesos. But it allows you to define keep alives, like HTTP pings, like hit this URL, and if it doesn't respond, kill that and start a new one, things like that. And one of the problems we had with Marathon, an alternative is Apache Aurora. That's another thing, another Mesos framework that allows you to do long-running processes. We had the issues with Marathon with the last version that is, actually it's the last version that has been released. 1.4 has not been released yet. And if you try to scale, you will hit at some point limits, like in the way it stores data in a Zookeeper cluster. Zookeeper is used to leader election, and the way Marathon stores data, it basically will screw you at some point. So we hit this limit at around 1,100 or so apps running on Marathon, and supposedly it's fixed on master, but well, just so you know. And the other thing we use, Terraform, if anybody familiar with Terraform? Yes? Yeah. Okay, so Terraform basically allows you to do infrastructure as code. You define a text file, what your resources are, and it has support for multiple cloud providers. Like in Amazon, this is a AWS definition. You say how many instances you want, what instance type, what AMI to use, things like that. And when you run Terraform against this file, basically it will create the infrastructure for you. It manages the state. It keeps the state in the files, and it gets it synced with the cloud and runs RDM potent. So you can run Terraform as many times as you want. It will make the state match what you have defined. So if you go and manually change something on the cloud and you run Terraform again, it will bring it back in line with your definition. And sometimes it's too automatic. Like you can change things that will screw you big time. Like if you change the image ID, because you like Amazon doesn't allow you to change an image of an instance once it has been started because it's already running. Terraform, what it will do, will kill that instance and start a new instance with a new image. So sometimes, yeah, that's too automatic. And we also had to fix some bugs, but no. So sometimes with Terraform happens, there's like, yeah, to make errors human, to propagate error to all servers in an automated way. That's what DevOps is, right? So another, actually, one thing that happened with this, yeah, we had to work a little bit around that. As I said, you change something on Terraform, you run Terraform and like it starts destroying everything, right? All the instances, and you're like, uh-oh, this is not right. So especially for services that are more old style, I guess, like you need some disk or some, I mean, you don't have like a cluster of instances running and you can load balance around across all of them and you kill some of them. And it's okay, it keeps running the service. But if you kill the wrong things, you cause some downtime. The other tool we use is Packer, also from, I mean, Terraform is from HashiCorp, Packer, same thing. And this is a tool to create images. So it allows you to create AMIs, Docker images, Azure images, whatever it is, OpenStack. And we pre-install all these packages we want and anything else we need. When you run and we start a new instance from these images, you don't have to download anything from the internet because the internet fails sometimes. if you have any questions anytime, just tell me. We created our own Mesos framework to run on Mesos for Jenkins agents. There's a plugin called the Jenkins Mesos plugin, shocking name, that basically you install it, and every time you create a job, you can define like images, Docker images, and say, okay, Java 9 image. And if you label your jobs with the same label, then it will run your jobs inside the Java 9 Docker image. If you can have multiple definitions, Java 9, Java 8, whatever, and then your jobs, you just label them. And it works great. It will create the containers and run the jobs inside those containers, all inside Mesos. The problem is when you run this at scale, like thousands of masters, it's having Mesos is not made. I guess the use case of having hundreds of, not even thousands, but hundreds of frameworks running at the same time, it doesn't work very well. So the idea is you shouldn't have that. You should have only one framework. So what we've done is one framework that can talk to multiple Jenkins masters. So instead of having one framework for each master, which is what the Mesos plugin does, which is okay for one or two or a few masters, but if you need hundreds of frameworks, we have problems with Mesos. Mesos would lose leadership, and there would be some issues, some downtime. And also, the other way it works is with Jenkins, you can have resumable jobs, resumable builds with the new Jenkins pipeline, which means if your master dies while a job is running, but it gets restarted, the jobs will continue to work. So you can restart Jenkins master without killing all your jobs. The problem is if the Mesos frame with the Jenkins Mesos plugin, the framework is connected to the master. If the master dies, the framework dies and Mesos kills all the tasks running for that framework because the framework has died. So having one framework that is totally independent from all the masters allows us to be able to restart all the masters without any downtime in the jobs. I mean, this is getting into Mesos framework development, which is probably advanced needs. There's some, if you need to do that, because basically in Mesos you get the offers and then your framework decides what to do with those offers. So this Jenkins framework basically say, oh, I have these jobs in the queue, I have these offers, these jobs require this much memory, this much CPU, and now I'm matching them. That's what it does. And if you want to have some specific things like, oh, I want to do bin packing, I want to run the jobs in the small number of VMs, or I want to spread the load across the most VMs, then you need to implement that in your framework. But Netflix created some library called Netflix Fencer that we use, and it allows you to have different strategies and makes it a lot easier to develop your own Mesos framework. So we can do more advanced allocation of jobs to the Mesos. Another case that we had to consider is storage. So in a container world, you have all these containers running, but typically, it's stateless. A lot of people talk about give it stateless samples. But for Jenkins master, being more like a traditional app, it needs disk. We had to consider distributed storage, right? If you start a master, it can start anywhere in the cluster, in any machine. And if that machine dies, it can move to another machine. Imagine this running across availability zones. That's also a problem. So masters need persistent storage. Agents typically don't, unless you want to keep the workspace around. What we built is we built it supporting EBS volumes on AWS and NFS and OpenStack. So what we did back in the day, today you have like volume drivers in Docker, and there's support for volume drivers in Mesos One. But back in the day, what we did was it's called a sidekick container, which is a privileged container that runs on each host, and it manages the mounting of volumes. So whenever a master starts, it calls this local service and says, my name is Master Wang, I need my home folder. And this will go and fetch the EBS volume, attach it to the host, and do all sorts of magic. Because we use NSCenter, which is like it's a program that does some system calls. But NSCenter, once you are, because we're running this as a privileged container, with NSCenter you can run commands both in the host or any other container. This is basically running commands on other containers and entering other namespaces of the other processes running. So you can do crazy stuff. Like we run things on the host, we run things on the container that is calling, doing the HTTP call to get provision space. And we do all the mounting on the host and mind mounting the volumes into the container and things like that. But today it's really not needed anymore. You can just use volume drivers and it's probably a lot simpler. So yeah, I'm gonna probably skip this. This is what we do. This service also, what it does is backups and cleanups. So when you have volumes being mounted in the host and for whatever reason the container dies, there's a limit of how many volumes you can attach at the same time, so you still need to do some cleanup. And what it does, it takes snapshots of the volumes from time to time, and if the container is no longer running, it listens to the Docker events to see if the containers die. If the container dies, then it detaches the volume and destroys the volume and after making a backup. So it's all this storage management. The problem you have with the storage always is permissions. Everybody has this issue at some point. So you shouldn't run your containers as root. But you have to be aware that the container user ID is not the same as the host user ID, even if the name is the same. So Jenkins Docker container, for instance, runs by default as user 1000. And people always mix the user 1000 in the container is just called Jenkins, but the user 1000 in the host is, for instance, is called Ubuntu. So you gotta be careful that the IDs match, especially if you are using like NFS. You know, the IDs need to match in all the containers and host and everything. So things that we realize along the way, there's a limited number of EBS volumes that you can mount on Amazon to an instance. There's similar limits. I know in Google Cloud, there's also a limited number. But in AWS, it's especially interesting because it's like they say you should only use SDF to SDP. Dev SDF to SDP, but we try with SDF to SDC, and it still works, but basically you are limited on the number of letters in the alphabet. And it reaches a point where if you try to schedule more things into the host, it won't be able to attach these volumes, and the startup of the containers will fail. And in Amazon also, there's some weird issue where you try to mount things into a device, and that device fails to mount, and you try to mount it again or different volumes in that device, and it doesn't work anymore. So we have to blacklist sometimes devices because they just go bad for whatever reason. This is about the NFS. And one of the things you want to control also in the cluster is how much memory you allocate and how do you distribute the containers based on the memory requirements. So the scheduler, in this case Mesos, needs to account and limit how much memory. So putting things in VMs that have memory, enough memory, and using basically C groups through Docker to limit how much memory. This is when you set the memory limits on Mises or Marathon. This translates to Docker dash dash memory. I mean, everybody here uses Docker. Who uses Docker? Okay, not everybody. All right, so one interesting thing. So basically, you are running processes in containers limited by the kernel on how much memory they use. So when you use set Docker dash dash memory, you're basically saying, I want to limit the memory this process uses. So let me show you an example for a JVM. This is just a Maven build. So Java JVM app. And I'm running this test. This is a test from a Maven that basically uses memory and waits for and garbage collection happens as usual. Uses memory, keeps using memory, but garbage collection happens, right? So this is using, it gets to around 300 megs or something like that. Then garbage collection happens, keeps using memory, and so on. And this works. I'm running this with just unlimited memory, normal Docker command line, and this is the Maven Docker image. So what do you think it happens if I go and limit the amount of memory I set for this container and, to less than what it typically uses? Crash, define crash. Any answers? No? Out of memory exception? For things out of memory exception? No? Nobody? Well, typically people using the JVM expect out of memory exceptions, right? So what happens is I'm limiting it to 192 megabytes here. So I'm saying dash M, which is dash dash memory, 192 megabytes. This works as it were before. It keeps using memory until it gets to a point where it basically does nothing, right? It is stopped. We don't know what happened, just nothing happened. It just the process died. So if I do Docker inspect NVM test, what I can find here though is that in the state I get an OOM kill true. So this is basically the kernel saying this process was limited, you ran out of the over the limited amount, I'm killing you. And you get nothing. The process dies with you see exit code 137, which is basically a -9 signal, sick kill. So that's it. The process has no time to do anything. No cleanup, nothing. So that's what happens. And why does it happen? Because the JVM by default, well, the JVM and a lot of other tools like Free or Top, they don't see how much memory the container has allocated. They see how much memory the host has. So if you run this on a 16 gig machine, they will show, if you run in a container and you do free or something like that, you will see there's 16 gigs free. And what the JVM does when you don't set any parameter is basically saying, in most of the cases, the heap, the amount of heap memory limit is going to be 1/4 of the total available in the machine. So if you have 16 gigs available, it's going to say, well, I'm going to run this Java, this JVM with 4 gigs, right? So once it's not going to call garbage collection until a lot later, because it still has, it thinks it has 4 gigs available, but it actually doesn't have them. So what can we do to fix this? Especially, this is a big problem, especially in Jenkins, where people can run whatever they want. I mean, you don't know what they are going to run in advance. So what you can do is in Maven, and each tool is different, you can say Maven opts and pass the JVM parameters, like XMX192. So I'm limiting the memory, but I'm also telling the JVM, hey, limit the heap to 182 megabytes. And the JVM, what it's going to do, is going to work as expected. It's going to work a lot slower because it's going to do more garbage collection once it hits that limit, but it's not going to go over that limit in the heap. And it will keep running. Now, I was cheating a little bit because Maven by default, when it runs the tests, it creates a forked process. And I was running without a forked process. I was running the tests in the same JVM as Maven. There's an option in the POM file to do that. But if you run the default, even with the same parameters, so with the JVM being forked, and the same parameters, 182 megabytes limit and 182 max heap, what you get is this, right? It gets to a point, you get a kill message, and Maven basically tells you the fork VM terminated with the same properly goodbye. So Maven has spun out a new JVM. The JVM gets killed by the kernel, the new one, and Maven says, like, I don't know what happened. This JVM just died. And remember, it died with a sick kill, right? So what happens is Maven opts apply to the first JVM process, but not to the fourth ones. There's an option in the POM to do that, to set JVM parameters to the test running. But obviously, that means the user has to configure all of that. But fortunately enough for us is there's another option that the JVMs take, all the OpenJDK and Sun JVMs, which is _ Java options, which means any JVM that gets started will honor this option if it has nothing else set. So any JVM that gets started from Maven now will have this option set, which will make this work, but still it's not perfect because if you have, I don't know, 24 processes, they all get the same amount, and it may be more than what the container is. So basically what it means is you have to be aware of how much memory the container has, and you have to set your Java processes to use no more than that memory. So, oops. Yeah, so what about the CPU? When you can also set limits by CPU, and the in Mesos you can say memory and CPU, and Marathon, same thing. And let's say you want to, what happens if your process uses more CPU than the one you have limit or set on Mesos? Well, the answer is nothing. So what the CPU you set in Mesos, and in all the schedulers is the same thing in Kubernetes, it translates to Docker CPU shares, which basically is just a weight on the processes. So if you're running a 4 CPU machine and you say I want 0.1 CPU shares, you're gonna get, if you are the only process, you're gonna get 100 all the CPUs in the on all the CPU time in that machine. If you say I want you have two processes and one has 0.1 CPUs and the other has 0.1 CPUs, they're gonna share 50-50, the CPU power. If you have one with 0.1 and another with 0.2, The 0.2 will have twice as much time as the 0.1. So it's just a weight. But it's also used for finding the machine that has enough requirements. So if you go and say, I want 16 CPUs, Mesos is not going to put that in any machine that has not that doesn't have 16 cores available. So that's why it's complicated to limit both in CPU and memory, so that's why we typically use just memory and let leave CPU's values pretty small so they fit, and it's memory that one that triggers. But if you have a CPU-intensive task or something, then you may want to handle that. I could talk about that zombie ripping. We are, 36 minutes in? All right. The problem with containers is when you run in a normal system, not containerized OS, initd or systemd are the process number one, and they will take care of any processes that are started there if the process in the middle dies, right? If systemd starts a process that starts another process, if any of the process in the middle dies, initd will inherit the child processes. The problem in the containers is that process number one is whatever you've set it to be. So it's, in our case, was like Jenkins master, so JVM, or Jenkins agent, or whatever you run. If that process starts new processes, and any of those die in the middle, the process number one now is the JVM, and it's not going to inherit that. And this will show up in your OS process table as different processes. So what we do in Jenkins, in the Jenkins Docker image, and some people do this too, is using a process one that takes care of all this ripping of children. Especially in non-running apps. Like in Docker agents, it doesn't matter that much because the container ends. And so when the container ends, the process number one ends in the container. Basically, all the processes get handled and ripped by the host init. But if you have a long-running process and long-running container, any child of that container that is defunct is never cleaned up. So there's a tool called, or a service called Tiny, that basically we set that as the what we run in a container is not Java something, it's Tiny, and Tiny runs Java something. So Tiny, its only job is to do a defunct process ripping. And this was a special problem for us in Docker 1.9. We're now in Docker 1.12, so and that's we haven't seen that anymore. But you still need Tiny to. It's not just a matter of, yeah, there's no way around it. If it's not, Docker is not going to handle that for you. And other things that you have to consider is networking. In Jenkins, for instance, we expose HTTP and a JNLP port for build agents, and another port that is like an SSH server interface from the Jenkins master. So you know, you gotta make sure that you know you can access. This is running in the cluster. This is running in some port in some VM that is totally dynamic and they move around. So what we do, and there's a Marathon LB, and we just use Nginx running to basically talk to Marathon. It asks, where is this container running, what port, what host, and Nginx just proxies things through. So it's very simple. And we do both domain-based routing, so we can point to master1.example.com, or path, so you could do example.com/master1 and this will dynamically go to the app that to the Jenkins master that has the name. And you can have a HTTPS later on the load balancing side and so. For the GNLP, well, this is a very specific thing for Jenkins. The Jenkins master is aware of where it is running, and the agents connect directly. This is not proxy through. And for SSH, we run a tunnel service that if you configure this host and proxy command, the tunnel service is like a binary running on one machine that is called tunnel. And if you set the host and proxy command in your client machine, you can just SSH into any running container you want. So this is very cool for not having to deal with what host is running, what port, and so on. It will just basically, Tunnel will get that information from Marathon, and you, in your client, you just have to SSH as you would normally do. Have you seen the Hitler video for Docker? Well, you probably should. And with this, I think we're gonna let you go on Friday. This is one of the best parts. So if you have any questions, because I don't think there's point in, I mean, I can keep playing the video after you have the questions. So, yeah.
What about the pipeline workflows and the storage? Do you use a shared storage like NFS or volumes?
You could have storage for the Jenkins agents. We don't do it by default, and there's some work having it generally for Jenkins, like as pipelines, you can mount things before. You could mount things from the host, like a cache. I mean, there's ways of doing it. The problem is you gotta be aware of it. So there's no magic.
Yeah.
Because people want to have builds in Docker containers, so they are always fresh builds, and there's no state, and you always start from a clean state until they actually do it and realize, I mean, it's downloading the internet every time, right? So before getting into more complex things, we basically just tell everybody, you know, you should use Nexus and have like a Docker registry or something in the same network and everything, right? Before going into complex things. If you want to have some cache of the workspace, then you need to deal with cleaning it up. You need to ensure there's room, enough room in the machines.
Keep in sync, I suppose.
Because if you want to keep them in sync, I mean, running builds on NFS is not great. It's not very good. It depends on the use case. There's some people that are okay. That's one of the things we were trying to do with Affinity. Like, you always run the build agent in the same machine if possible, if not somewhere else. And then when it starts somewhere else, you could just start from scratch. So as most of the times, you would hit the same machine, and you would have cache. And then other times, you would just start from scratch. But then some people want to do caching of the Maven repository, local repository, and the NPM things. I mean, things that typically don't change, and share that for all the builds. But it's, yeah, you gotta be aware. It depends on what you're running.
I was talking more about the building scripts, you know, all those Maven scripts and screams and those kind of workflows configuration, I mean.
But the workspace, you mean the workspace, keeping the workspace from one build to the next?
Yeah, just in case a master died and you need to start it again, and how to keep in sync the configuration to get a new set of workspace. The key was more.
So if the master dies, it's not going to lose data. If the master dies, it keeps the data.
Yeah.
If the agent, you're talking about if the agent dies
more,
or?
More in the master side.
Oh, no, if the master side, we have EBS and NFS, so.
So you, in the end, you play with NFS?
Yeah.
Mounting, let's say, in a...
Yeah, the Jenkins home folder, like, yeah. Everything that is in disk is persistent.
It's a pity having this kind of protocol behind that it's full of pitfalls, because some cache and these kind of things. We've been working with NFS, and sometimes it's a bit
Yeah,
noisy.
So what we do with NFS is basically you provide your own NFS server, because most companies will have something already. So you just give us the location and it will do it. For Amazon, we do EBS volumes. So we create a new volume for each master, and we keep a snapshot of that volume, and we recover from the snapshot if it gets started again. So we don't lose data. There's optimizations to be done on the agent side, whether you want to keep the workspace and things that you've built, or your Maven cache, your jars, something. But you don't really lose data. It's just optimizations of caching, things like that.
Thank you.
Any other question?
Okay. How many times happened that you lost the 70% of your infrastructure?
Well, I'm just gonna make, because it's like a small group of people. Yeah, last time we have everything so automated. We test this every commit in 5 different clusters: 3 in Amazon, 2 on OpenStack. And this is all automatic and creates all the infrastructure, runs some tests, destroys all the infrastructure, all the cluster. And we were preparing a demo for Jenkins World, actually, and one of the guys destroyed the wrong cluster, the one that had 2,000 master running and stuff like that. So it was like, oh, God. But yeah, that's if you haven't destroyed something by mistake, is that you haven't automated enough. When you have everything automated, you're like, oh, yeah, I hit this thing a lot. Oh, shit. Yeah, it's like, oof. Well, I can keep playing this if you want to hear it. But.